Yesterday. but of course, it's a group, so we're going to have some generators. And, you know, under a Poincaré transformation, some field, okay, this doesn't mean a scalar field, some field which has some Lorentz indices, or so we don't know what the dimensionality of this is yet. This is, and upon, under a Poincaré transformation, this is going to go to e to the I omega mu nu n mu nu times phi. So this thing is a matrix with the same dimensionality as phi. Okay, these are the generators. And these are the global parameters. So they don't depend on space-time themselves. But, you know, they're going to encode how much you translate, how fast the Lorentz boost is and stuff. Okay, that's the parameters go in there. And then what I'm going to do is give you the algebra of these generators. Yeah, okay, so we can change that if you want. Make it clearer. Okay. But we're familiar with what happens when, you know, this is an index that just goes 1, 2, or 3. 0, 1, 2, or 3. So that's the way a vector transforms. And of course, if it's a scalar field, then this generator is zero because it's invariant, and so on. But okay, so let's write down the local properties, which are described by the algebra. So for small, local means for small parameters. W mu nu, or omega mu nu, by the algebra of the Hermitian generators. So the idea is that, you know, these generators themselves live in this matrices with the same dimensionality as alpha and beta, okay? And then when you exponentiate them, of course, the matrix will also have that dimensionality. Matrix. I'm going to represent them by matrices. All right, so the algebra of the Poincaré group is true no matter what dimension, what representation you choose. And it defines the group. So, we have the Lorentz, strictly speaking, this is a Lorentz transformation. Of course, I should have added, if I add some P mu's and A mu's, okay, I can do that. Plus A mu P mu. So this, so these omega mu nu's do the Lorentz transformations, and the a mu's do the p mu's do the translations for you. So that's still alpha beta.
Do we get like a combined mu nu where the diagonal components are the p's?
No, I mean, so. All right. If we just do a Lorentz transformation, we just have that, okay? And these mu nu's, each mu nu, each component, so m 0 0 is a matrix, okay?
Yeah.
But then these things, yeah. This is proportion. This is times the identity, I guess. Is that what you're asking? So mu nu is a matrix, and this term is times the identity. Okay. So my granddad was Irish, he was from Cork, and that's why I got to use green chalk today. Okay, so the generators of translations, which are these P mu's, they commute. But they don't commute with the Lorentz rotations and boosts, Lorentz transformations. So these generate angular momentum. Yeah, angular momentum. So they generate rotations, I should say, and Lorentz boosts. So I can give you a four-dimensional representation of these M's, for instance. So just for an example, 4D rep M rho sigma. So each one of these components is a matrix, and so I can label it by the rows and columns of the matrix by 0, 1, 2, 3. And in that case, can you guys at the back see? No. Right. I hate this blackboard. It's too low. All right, 4D rep. Just to give you an idea. So this is quite a simple representation. M mu nu delta rho nu minus eta. So you can go away and check that these, if you define that, then the algebra is satisfied. Yes? Actually you can arrange them in different bases. If you remember from quantum mechanics, Hermitian operators are observables. And so that you want these to be observable quantities. You want them to have real eigenvalues. So, you know, for example, the angular momentum, the spin. Yep. Thank you. Yes. Thanks. Absolutely. Okay, so we have our SO1-3 symmetry. This is locally homomorphic to SU2 cross SU2. Okay, so a homomorphism is a map. It just means, you know, there's a map between these generators and these generators, and the operations here and the operations here. Okay. So we can rewrite this in a handy form. So I can write. So now we have I is 1, 2, and 3. And Ji we define as 1/2 epsilon ijk mjk. Okay, these Ji are the generators of rotations. So their eigenvalues are going to label the spin of the state. Okay.
So I, J, K, 1, 2, 3.
So there's like a subset, you know, the M12, M13, and M23 are the generators of the Lorentz transformations that give you the spin or the angular momentum generators. And then it's the ones with zeros in. So I define that as Ki. That generate Lorentz boosts. Now, the M0i satisfy this SO1,3, which is basically given by this algebra here. And so the mu nus satisfy that. Okay. So what we're going to do now is try and you see, it's much easier to understand spinners using this decomposition. Spinners easier than using the usual language in SO1,3. So what we're going to do is show a map from SO1,3 to this thing, and then we can describe spinners. Spinners are two-dimensional, or fundamental spinners, are two-dimensional representations of this algebra. We've got a four-dimensional representation here, but we want to find a 2D one. Okay. So I'm going to define define non-Hermitian generators AI, which is a half JI plus I K, and BI, which is a half JI minus I K. So actually, they're the Hermitian conjugates of each other. And then you can check, if you like, that the Lorentz algebra star, you can rewrite that in terms of A's and B's, and you'll find that AI commutes with BJ. AI and the commutator of AI and AJ is I epsilon IJK AK. Okay. So this immediately, if you were familiar with group theory, you would see that. And you say, oh, okay, now we know what these that is. That's SU2, right? Anything that has that commutation relation with, so there's three of them, there's an I and an epsilon, that is the algebra of SU2. Okay, so we've got one of the SU2s. And in fact, it's the same deal with the other generators B. Okay, so we've got two, we've got another SU2 as well. Okay, so we've got two SU2s which, where the generators commute with each other. That means we've shown that when we use this decomposition of generators, we have SU2 cross SU2 here. No, that's right. So, so there is an additional constraint on it, actually. If you can notice that if you take AI dagger, you get BI, right? So we'll see. It's not quite as simple, but complex conjugation will take you from one to the other, actually. So with that constraint, it's SU2 cross SU2. Okay, so under a parity transformation, parity reversal, the spin goes to itself. Remember that, well, at least with orbital angular momentum, the angular momentum is, the spatial component across the momentum. And when you do a parity reversal, you change the direction, you change the sign of space, but you change the sign of the momentum as well, so the spin remains invariant. But on the other hand, Lorentz boosts are going to get a minus sign, right? Because the boost is like in this direction, and that's going to change sign. So, and you can check that with looking at explicit representations of the boosts. So under a parity reversal, we have Ji remaining them set the same, and Ki getting a minus sign. So the A's and B's get swapped. So these SU2's get swapped under a parity reversal. So you'll notice that J is A plus B. So this is the physical spin. Of a state. So okay, this is the generator of the physical spin. So if you act on a state with this thing, you'll get back an eigenvalue, which is the spin times h bar times the state. Okay, so if we label, we can label our representations. We can say what dimensionality they are under this SU2 and what dimensionality they are under this SU2. So we label reps by A and B. So then spin, physical spin is A plus B. So we'll see some examples of that coming up. So we have another homomorphism. All of this is homomorphic to SL2C. This is the group of all 2x2 complex matrices. So that's what the L means. L means linear. This special linear group over the field. So it's two-dimensional over the field of complex numbers. Special means determinant equals 1. So this is the group of all 2x2 complex matrices. So it's the set of all matrices. The group operation is multiplication and inversion. Matrix mult and inversion. Okay, and actually, the most handy way of representing the fermions, handy for massless fermions. So the SU2 cross SU2 representation or decomposition is useful for identifying the spin, but when we want to talk about the spinners themselves, actually, I should call that spinner, then we're going to use SL2C. Okay. So let's just consider a vector of the Lorentz group, say x mu. So consider this, where emu is the components and it gives you the directions in time and space. So we can represent this thing either by this column vector x mu or by a matrix. And sigma mu is going to be these are going to be 2x2 matrices. So the first one is the identity, and the rest are the Pauli matrices. So represent, the algebra of generators of SU2. Okay, so those three are Pauli matrices. All right, so when I expand this thing out, into matrix form, this is what I get. So, if we have some vector x mu in the conventional representation, a Lorentz transformation preserves the size of x. And so the size of x is defined as x0 squared minus x1 squared minus x2 squared minus x3 squared. That's the definition of SO1, 3. One of the definitions. And we see that this thing that's preserved when written in this way, this is the SL2 way of writing it, is the determinant of this thing. So as long as the Lorentz transformation preserves the determinant of this thing, then we're home and dry here.
So is that just lucky, or is there a reason why this thing is
Is it just lucky? Well, it's constructed. So this is what I'm doing is representing. This is the way that you'd normally think of representing it in SO1, 3. But actually, that's homomorphic means it's kind of the same thing as this SL2C, okay? And that's the representation under SL2C. So they're going to have the same properties because of that homomorphism. So that's why. So it's the determinant now of X that's preserved. And actually, that's good because this S means the determinants. The determinants of these sigmas are one. And you can see that they're. Determinant of all of these matrices is one, right? Well, okay, mod determinant. Okay, good. All right. So normally, so we have these two ways of writing down Lorentz transformations. On X, so if we use the original X, this goes to, you know, our Lorentz boost times X with, you know, our conditions we gave last time on the Lorentz boosts. So I'm writing these Lorentz boosts as matrices now. So we need to just check that the size is preserved under this Lorentz boost. So we go, so this X becomes lambda times X. And then we have an eta, and then we have lambda times x. So from above, this thing is just eta. Okay, so this size is preserved. Oh, Lorentz transformation, it can involve rotations as well. Okay, then under an SL2C transformation, X tilde, okay, now this goes to N, where N is a member of SL2C, times X tilde times N dagger. So we're proposing that that's what happens to this X tilde under a Lorentz transformation. And so you can take determinants on both sides. And then the size of X tilde is preserved under that transformation, okay? Which it also must be for a Lorentz transformation. We know that because the determinant, so product of matrices, you just get products of the determinants. N has determinant 1 because it's a member of SL2C. And the determinant of X is the size. X tilde is the size. Good. Why you, sorry?
Why you need to conjugate by N and not just multiply it?
Leave that off. Okay. I mean, essentially, well, there's two indices on this SL2C matrix, and they're both involved in the transformation essentially. You know, if you write an object, a representation of the group, down in terms of fundamental indices, each one of those indices gets transformed. And because of this thing that one of them is the complex conjugate of the other, you know, that's essentially what this is telling you. Okay, it's kind of a, you know, it's going a bit deep into the group theory, so it's not so important here. Okay, good. All right, so now the point we want to get to is spinners. And so now let's look at other representations of SL2C. And that's actually a spinner. So the fundamental rep is we write as some object with an alpha. Alpha and beta, I just go from 1 to 2. And it transforms as follows. This thing goes as n alpha beta psi beta. So, okay, this is, we're getting more to answer your question here. This is the fundamental representation of SL2C. A four-dimensional one is not. That's actually got two indices because it's a matrix. Okay, so that's the fundamental rep. Then we have, so that's the transformed field, this this primed field. Okay, good. Right. And then we have a conjugate representation. Which I'm going to put a bar over to denote the fact that it's a conjugate. And these will have indices, dotted indices, which also go from 1 to 2. And the dotted ones tell you it's a conjugate, you know, they're conjugate indices representations. And those ones get an n star. When you transform them.
Star and convex conjugate?
Yeah. Absolutely. So, actually, yeah. So there are some contravariant representations, representations with indices upstairs, and these ones transform like the inverse. With the inverse member of the group. And there's also an upstairs chi bar index which transforms like the inverse of the complex conjugated N matrix. Like that. So this dotted and undotted notation you'll see throughout basically any textbook on supersymmetry. So it's a bit painful when you first meet this. You say, look, we've spent all the time dealing with Dirac, you know, four-component Dirac spinners. Why do we have to go to this damn new thing with you know, these two-component spinners? And the answer is, it actually makes the algebra much easier. We'll see later. This thing is a left-handed spinner. Okay, just like quark left is going to be an example of one of these fields in the standard model, and the barred representations are right-handed guys. And supersymmetry always distinguishes between these two. And so rather than go through the whole algebra with left and right-handed projection operators everywhere, we just go back to the basic spinner representations of the Lorentz group.
Is on V conjugate, and the conjugate representations are on V conjugate dual and V dual.
I don't know whether that's the correct mathematical statement or not. It may be. All right, good. So, all right, we need to work out how to construct invariant tensors now out of these spinners. So, just to remind you, you know that e to mu nu is invariant under SO1,3. And in fact, we use, since eta mu nu, viewed as a matrix, is the inverse of eta mu nu with indices downstairs, then we use the etas to raise and lower indices. Actually, I guess you're right. The contravariant representations are always in the dual vector space. So, yeah.
It's not obvious to me at this point that these psis and chis are actually spinners. Is there something that will become obvious?
What do you mean by spinner?
That the psi, I mean, you're calling them spinners, right? Why are we calling them spinners?
Well, that's the question, right? So people mix up this language all the time, so I want to be very clear. Spinner means a two-dimensional representation of the Lorentz group. That's all it means, okay? Doesn't mean anti-commuting. A Grassmann-valued quantity, or fermion, really, is the anti-commuting bit. Now, it just happens that in nature, the spinners that we see are actually also Grassmann-valued, but mathematically they're different things. Actually, apart from, well, of course, you deal with ghosts, for instance, which are Grassmann values, valued, but Lorentz scalars. Okay, so we need to be able to get from the dual space, the contravariant representation, to the vector space, which is this guy. I've just realised actually that you're right, by the way. I don't know what your name is in the red t-shirt. You're right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've just thought about it. So we need to get from the dual space to the other space. So we need a way of lowering and raising these alphas, and actually, we use epsilon tensors, epsilon alpha beta, which is minus epsilon alpha beta with indices downstairs, which is a zero or plus or minus one. So, okay. What I mean by this is that epsilon 1,2 is plus one, and epsilon 1,2 downstairs is minus one. Okay. There are loads of different ways of organizing the signs of these epsilons, and in every textbook they're different, okay? So be careful. But at least in these lectures, everything should be consistent with these ways of doing it. Okay.
Do you use epsilon to raise more alpha dot and beta dot?
We'll have epsilon, So we'll have epsilons with dotted indices as well. Yep. So, right, we know how epsilon transforms because these are fundamental indices. They're contravariant ones in this case. And so each of these gets an n to the minus 1. Okay, so if you think about it and think of these as matrices, this combination, you can expand this out. And you'll see that, you know, because these are 2 by 2, this product is just the determinant of n to the minus 1. That determinant is 1 because it's SL2C. So the epsilons are invariant. So, the way that we use them in these lectures is defined as follows. So now, the order of the indices is deadly important because you'll get a minus sign if you get the order wrong. And supersymmetry is a devil for minus signs. But the way that they're organized in these lectures is like this. Again, people use different conventions sometimes. So this is how we get from a contravariant rep to just covariant. So, if you want to handle mixed indices, so supposing we have a vector index in the more usual SO1, 3 decomposition. We can consider this combination. So now, the sigma matrices have a dotted and an undotted index. And that's why we got an N and an N dagger when we, because we know that written in terms of fundamental indices, you get an n, and the dotted guys always get an n star. So under a Lorentz transformation, this goes to n n star. But we know that this has got to be equal to the other way of doing the Lorentz transformation, when we just transform this x mu like that. And so this allows us to tell what's this a relation with this sigma mu, just by identifying the left and right-handed sides. Sigma mu alpha alpha dot is n alpha beta sigma mu beta gamma dot, and so minus 1 mu nu n star alpha dot, gamma dot. And one of the tutorial questions is just to provide that map, the map between two ways of doing Lorentz transformations more explicitly. Okay, we can define so we've got these sigma mu's, which are have downstairs indices, but we can define another kind of sigma with upstairs indices, contravariant, and we just raise the indices in the usual way. So now you can check for yourselves if you substitute in for the epsilons here, you'll find that this is equal to, instead of the identity and the Pauli matrices, you get, depending on mu, you get minus the Pauli matrices. If you just do the matrix multiplication, you'll get minus the Pauli matrices transposed, because there's an implicit transpose here, because you've swapped the order of the dotted and the undotted indices. Okay, so we've got to a stage now where we can define the generators. We can define the ends. And we define them in terms of these two matrices, these two tensors, sigma mu nu, for the spinner representations. In spinner rep. Spinner rep. So we have sigma mu nu alpha beta, which is I over 4 sigma mu sigma bar nu minus sigma nu sigma bar nu. Okay, so we know so these actually satisfy the Lorentz algebra which we wrote in star at the start of the lecture. But they're 2x2, they're two-dimensional representations now. And for instance, a left-handed spinner, psi alpha, goes to E. Well, okay. There's a factor of 2 convention. Omega mu nu, sigma mu nu. So as previously advertised, you know, they it's actually sigma over 2, which is the generator. And so of course we've been calling this matrix here, we've been calling that N previously. Yeah, okay, I'll just finish this bit and then we'll have a break. I'm quite tired. So consider the spins with respect to SU2 spanned by A and B with respect to A and B's. So for psi alpha, this has an isospin under the first SU2 of a half, and it's a singlet under the second SU2. So we know what the Lorentz boosts and the spin generators look like. And for chi bar, the alpha dot upstairs, it's actually transforming under the other SU2. And you can prove those by using our previous expression for the JIs, okay, that we derived. Okay, so there are some useful identities. Okay, and you're going to be proving these. They're just short bits of algebra, but I think probably the next tutorial will be to show these. Some of it's, you know, just picking out components and checking with a bit of matrix multiplication. So these are things that you'll be using several times throughout the course. So it's good just to verify them in a few cases. Actually, yeah, it's not ideal that I've got sigmas there. Let's call that chi. Sigma, bar, rho, chi. So actually, the sigma mu nus are anti-symmetric, turns out. Anti-sim. So normally you'd think there are six components. So for an anti-symmetric in the mu nu space tensor, you have six components, 4/3/2 components. But these two self-duality conditions reduce them by a further factor of two. Okay, are there any more questions on today's lecture? We'll see in a lecture or two how these two component, you can write the normal four component Dirac spinners in terms of the two of these two component ones. So there is a map from Dirac spinners to these guys. Okay, that's it.